Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to another Invest with Clarity podcast with Mark Pearson. Today, we're going to talk about underperforming the underperformance. Remember, when you have clarity in your investments, things fundamentally differently than other people do. And we're going to dive into that when it comes to when the market has small adjustments to the downside. Fair statement?
That would be a very fair statement. Yes, sir.
Okay, so where do we begin? How do we start breaking down the behavioral components and then the actual rubber meets the road numbers aspect of underperforming the underperformance?
Well, I think, Matt, anytime you have a situation where you have an unexpected black swan event that affects the market, clarity becomes that much more important. I think I mentioned on one of the previous podcasts that we've just trademarked the phrase clarity creates stability. And we believe that ultimate clarity is what Nepsis is. And when you have clarity at any given moment, at any given second of the investment timeline, the more clarity you have, the better decisions you can make. This is not an opinion. This is a fact. The greater clarity you have about anything, it should enhance your decision-making process and everything that you're doing. And of course, the last black swan event was the crash of the markets during COVID. Mm-hmm. And as we record this right now, it's March 1st of 2021, and you are now in day five, or 2022. What did I say, 2021? Yeah, sorry. Good. Thanks. I'm just living in a continuum. It's March 1st of 2022. We're on day five or six of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And I'm not here to talk politics. What I am here to talk about is that in any given time, a black swan, an event can happen, an event that either is somewhat predictable or not predictable. And I won't debate the merits of that this invasion was predictable or not. But what I will debate is the idea of how you have to have flexibility in your portfolio. Our head of research is working on a big piece about the power of liquidity. Liquidity is one of the greatest tools an investor has. And quite frankly, when it comes to measuring performance in a portfolio or in assets, liquidity is the one part of the assets that is never really discussed. The power of liquidity. What we talk about is the power of flexibility, but the power of flexibility comes from the power of liquidity. So you had this invasion happen at a time when the markets here in the United States were already going through a corrective phase. You were already seeing markets down 5, 10, 15% because of inflation and a rising interest rate environment. And of course, as the last two podcasts we did, we talked about how this is a different world for investing, that high growth, high price to sales stocks, companies that take advantage of borrowing money at cheap prices to keep themselves going, is going to get stymied because it's going to cost more money to borrow. And the feds are taking liquidity out of the system. And so now, when you look at businesses you want to own in your portfolio, when you want to look at making your investment decisions, you've had a double whammy literally happen right now. And the double whammy is a consolidation or a reduction in the valuation people are willing to pay to own a business, i.e. the reduction of the price to earnings ratio. Okay. That's number one. Number two, you have, And by the way, that reduction has to do with what? Inflation, higher interest rates, higher oil prices, the fact that liquidity is coming out of the system. Okay, these are all basic financial 101 kind of things. Now layer on uncertainty around an invasion. And what are the geopolitical ramifications and what are the economic ramifications of Russia invading Ukraine? And look, at the end of the day, again, I'm not a politician. I'm not a, you know, historian. I don't sit and judge any political figure, anything like that. I'm a money manager whose job is to create alpha, to create a risk-adjusted return by investing my clients' money over time. And when you look at stacking on the already inflationary environment and you stack on the war, as we're doing this podcast right now, the S&P is down 10.18% year to date. The NASDAQ's down 14.22. The Dow's down 9.07. The Russell 2000's down 11.74. And the ACWI's down 9.47. It's just March 1st. This is the first 2 months of the year. Typically in corrective phases, and we have been in this corrective phase, as you know, Matt, there are wild swings. There's a lot of buying. There's a lot of selling. But remember the core component of investing with clarity. Invest in great businesses over time. Use volatility to take advantage of buying businesses on sale. At the same time, position yourself when there's uncertainty to hedge against future uncertainty should that happen. All comes from, Matt, the power of flexibility and liquidity. Flexibility and transparency create great opportunities.
One of the things that you've said in previous podcasts is the market has already priced some of this in. Do you think that's the case in some of this correction stuff that we're seeing right now? And I know that you don't predict the future and you're not giving specific investment advice, but do you think we're actually entering into bear market territory?
Okay. Great questions. First of all, do I think we're entering a bear market? Listen, if the NASDAQ gets down 20% and it did touch 20%, that is considered a bear market. The S&P has not gone down 20%. I think the most the S&P has been down is around 12, maybe 13. I could be wrong on that, but bottom line is it's not 20. But you have to remember there are cyclical bear markets and there are secular bear markets. Cyclical bear markets are short-term in nature. Secular bear markets are long-term in nature. I do not believe that we are in a secular bear market. I think the NASDAQ hit the 20% down. We've seen a lot of companies, particular expensive technology and other companies that don't have a lot of earnings, crash 40, 50, 60%. That's part of the reason why the NASDAQ is down so much more than the S&P. I do think that, like Jim Cramer says, there's always a bull market somewhere. There's always places to make money. And I texted a good friend of mine yesterday about some of the stuff going on. And we live in a world where a lot of investors who are younger in nature think that these high growth moves always happen. And then investing is pretty easy. And yes, investing is easy over short periods of time sometimes, but longer term, there's a lot of variables that play into what's going on. So when you look at bear market, cyclical, potentially, yes. Secular, long-term, no. I think by the end of the year, at the end of the elections, things will stabilize a lot more. This 12-month period is the time, has been the time that people should be really looking at how they reallocate their portfolio. As I told my friend yesterday, asset allocation is the most important hedge and aspect you have a portfolio. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. And we've bought companies recently that are growth oriented in nature, not because I think short term they're going to be great investments. I think they're going to be great investments long term, but you have to think long term. And frankly, a lot of the moves that we've made this year, because right now our clients are down probably, they're probably flat to down about 1.5 to 2%. In this market. So I'm going to address that in a second. Just remind me. But at the end of the day, when you look at what is happening, I do think there is a secular trend. And that secular trend, Matt, is lower price earnings ratios, companies that have pricing power, meaning their ability to raise prices in an inflationary environment, and that your price to earnings ratio and your PEG ratio, which is your PE ratio divided by growth rate, are going to be extremely strong components at looking at top down and bottom up investing.
All right. Underperforming the underperformance is really where we just transition into that statement. Yep. So if the S&P is down 10.1% and your clients are only down X amount, now we don't use that as apples to apples comparisons, of course, but when it comes to the over or underperforming the underperformance that a lot of people are experiencing right now, just elaborate on that, please.
Sure. So that's an important question. Actually, we were going to talk about something else on the podcast today, but I think in light of what's going on in Ukraine and what's happening with the markets, this becomes a tremendous learning opportunity for many investors who are new at investing. There's a reason why when you go buy an exchange traded fund or a mutual fund, Matt, that it says at the bottom of their prospectus and marketing information, past performance is not indicative of future performance, number one. Number two, as Nepsis does not publish historical returns because they're historical in nature. History doesn't matter. But for a lot of investors, what they do is they judge their portfolio versus a benchmark over short periods of time to see how well or poor their portfolio is doing. But it's not an apples to apples comparison. Additionally, when markets are going up, everybody wants to make more money. When markets are going down, everybody wants to still make money. But that's not investing in. Investing is. Portfolios expand and contract over short periods of time. But when they contract, it's what you do during those periods to create alpha longer term. In other words, as I've said before, the Shelby Davis quote, investors make the most money during bear markets. They just don't realize it at the time. Now, is it different this time to the extent as we've talked about in the previous podcast that higher interest rates, liquidity coming out of the system will have an impact on growth stocks? It already has had a significant impact, but that doesn't mean you don't invest in high quality growth companies that show you how to continue grow their earnings over a great period of time. Metrics, I'm going to go into the weeds for only a second to get to this underperformance title you talked about. Statistically speaking, when smart money, i.e. institutional money, big money, looks at a money manager, what they want to measure is what the alpha is of a portfolio. And the alpha is a statistical measurement of the performance of a portfolio relative to the risk that was taken. And these measurements, there's many of them that are used, will look at how much outperformance you have over a stated index and how much on a market going up and how much outperformance in a down market. Historically, what we've always told our clients is we want to outperform markets when it's going up. We want to make more money than everybody else. And when it's going down, we want to lose as much as the market because the market will turn and we'll have outperformance again. So our goal, frankly, is right now to use the statistical measurement is if we were down 10% like the S&P, I'd be pretty happy. But we're only down 1% to 2%, which means a 9% to 10% outperformance in a down market is off the charts. That is creating statistical alpha. Now, it could be argued, why is that the case? It fundamentally has to do with asset allocation. And quite frankly, Matt, decisions we made 18 months ago. Remember, investors make money in bull markets and in bear markets. But long-term investing is about asset allocation and allocating your portfolio in a manner to take advantage of what's going to happen the next 3 to 5 to 10 years, not the next 12 months, which is aptly what we say in our investment policy statement, by the way. This is important stuff to think about as things are going down. Now, when things are going down, if we were outperforming with the market and all things were being equal, heck, I'd be looking at growth stocks like crazy right now. And we do have a fair amount of growth stocks in our portfolio, even though we're down 2%. Shoot, Shopify is down over 50%. It's down 30% since we started buying it. But guess what? We bought more at the bottom. Square is the same way.
Yeah.
And so it's not that you can't invest long-term in growth names. You have to have a process before progress is what creates opportunity to create that statistical alpha over time. So yeah, our clients are feeling pretty good right now because remember, if we outperformed 2-1 in the previous 3 years, in theory, statistically, we should be down double the market right now. And we're not even remotely close to that.
Let's talk a little bit about part of your research really does look at sectors and what's happening in different areas of the markets and businesses within those markets specifically.
Yes.
When one sector goes wacko, right? How have you seen, so let's just talk about oil and gas, right? Because that's something, it's in the news, right? People are talking about the price of barrel oil, so on its production, all that stuff. How does that affect how you guys look at the overall market? Do you compartmentalize that or how do you break that apart? Because part of this underperformance, like you were talking about some big companies really went in the toilet. How does that affect the overall performance of the businesses that you own versus how those affect the markets? Does that question make sense?
Yeah, it's actually a very good question. This is why when we talk about our investment strategy and our philosophy, we talk about several important factors. But factor number one is, before I'm going to invest in any one specific company, I'm going to take the top-down approach first, meaning I'm going to look at the overall, we as a team, we're going to look at the overall economy. We're going to look at the long-term and short-term trends. We are going to look at what Fed policy is. We're going to look at multiple factors that we think will benefit the most from a top-down perspective over the next 3 to 5 to 10 years. The next thing we'll do then is we'll look at the bottom-up. I think investing in oil, look, hindsight's always 20/20,
yeah.
Right? I invested in oil for a long time. We got completely out of oil in end of 2014, January of 15, when it peaked the last time. We've said on this podcast, we think that oil's going to 150 again. Today, we're at over 100. And will oil pull back if something positive comes out of the Ukrainian situation? Yes, oil will pull back. But there's been structural decisions made, and this is not meant to be a political conversation, but we have shut down pipelines. We have decreased the amount of oil that we are producing here in this country for a long-term goal of becoming more carbon neutral. You can't shut the spigot. When you got to drink water every day, you can't shut the water off. It's got to be able to run all the time until you don't need it anymore. You know, that's a bad analogy. I guess what I'm trying to say is it's okay to be carbon neutral, but you can't just shut the spigot off today knowing all the ripple effects that can come from that. This is common sense stuff. And when Russia decides to do what they did, now you can see the impact to the United States because we are not energy independent anymore. We get oil from Russia. So how is that all going to play out? I don't know. What I do know that is, here's the more important aspect than everything I just told you. Remember, we're coming out of a 2.5-year economic lockdown. Mm-hmm. And there was pent up demand already coming out of COVID. Remember, airplanes aren't flying like they were. Cruise ships aren't cruising like they have been. And when they all come back online and people start going out more, guess what? Oil is going to get pinched more. So you have a double whammy. Now, when we made the decision to buy oil in 2020, look, we sold it at 150 in 2007. Actually, we didn't sell it. We hedged it. We bought inverse ETFs. In 2000 and sold those when oil hit like 70. Kept our oil stocks, sold them at when they went back up to 100, 110, 120 in 2014. When oil goes negative, I understand your economy is locked down, but oil can't be negative forever. And certainly that was the case. And that was a great time from a top-down standpoint to own oil. But let me talk about some of the other businesses we own. It's public information. Our largest holding is Devon Energy. I've literally cut my Devon Energy position in half in the last year at lower prices. It hit a 52-week high this morning of just under 61. I've sold oil starting at 25, just little bits, all the way up to 54. I've sold half of our position. And Devon is still the largest position in our portfolio right now. It was the number one performing S&P 500 stock in 2021. Everyone talks about FANG. Devon was your best performing stock. Now, Devon has great leadership, great management, great assets. They have executed. I still own the stock. I still think oil's going 150. If I make a decision to reduce more, probably when, I don't know. But remember, it's only one position in a top-down portfolio. Some of our best performing stocks this year have been our cybersecurity stocks. Chuck talked about CyberArk. Stocks up, I don't know. It went to 200 on earnings 3 months ago. It got down to 128 during this crash. I bought a bunch at 128. It's now at 160, 165, while everything's going down. Volatility creates opportunity. Why own cybersecurity? Obviously, look at what's going on now.
Yeah, totally.
This is why we own Web 3.0. We were going to talk about that today. We'll do it on the next one. Decentralized finance. This is why we're back in Square. This is why we own AMD. This is why we own Qualcomm. Look at driverless cars. That's a top-down play on a long-term thing. Now, stocks are volatile. Pigs get fat, hogs get slim. When AMD went to 160, you got to take profit. I can't tell you how many times, man, I talked to people who owned Intel and Cisco in the 90s, and they rode those puppies up from single digit to 100, and they rode them all the way back down. This is why liquidity and flexibility are so important in the investment process. Let me add one more point. Investors, many, don't have flexibility, and they don't have transparency to take advantage of these things. And more importantly, many money managers and many investors do not have the emotional psyche to pull the trigger when you should pull the trigger, either when you're buying or you're selling. Again, that's why we're so big in the behavioral finance aspect of investing.
All right. So as we wrap up today, you just opened up a huge can of worms that I have to address very quickly, which is this overall idea of the pent-up demand that we haven't even begun to see how pent up this actually is. The simple Correct. Fact that people can go to restaurants and start spending money again, that is going to have some very strong economic effects.
Yes.
Is this going to be... Somebody's had to have figured some of this out, right? Somebody's got to be able to say we're looking at, because of we have such pent-up demand, that we're thinking that the markets and that businesses, and here's the ones that are going to win and here's the ones that aren't going to win.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to be talking about that.
You're already, for sure, you're already seeing certain sectors baseline. I haven't looked at Shopify here in the last half hour since we got on the podcast. But before I came on the podcast, while everything was going down, Shopify was still up on the day. Now it's barely down. It's almost flat. Square is basically almost flat. I'm looking at just some of these names like Bristol Myers flat, Cigna flat. AMD is down about 3-5%. But that stock seems to be trading in a range and has bottomed. Qualcomm, the same way. These are companies we own. We've been buying in these swings right now at the bottom that during corrective phases, when there's uncertainty, at some point people are willing to pay for stocks at a certain price because this too shall pass.
Yes.
And when it passes, you want to be positioned. Quite frankly, we already are. This correction's been going on now since November. So you're 4 months into this market. Frankly, the S&P is down over the last 12 months. There's not been a lot of performance per se, but it's businesses you own that you can still withdraw out when you need your monthly income. And by the way, let me add, Bonds are negative this year too. Everybody who goes, quote unquote, let's go to a flight of safety, they're negative in return too. So I do think, as we have talked about this idea that it's a shift from value, from growth to value, and that this idea of professional money management is going to be continue to grow over indexing, you're experiencing it right now. And I think that's a long-term trend. And look, I could be totally wrong about a bunch of this. What? Guess what? We have the flexibility to adjust quickly. Yes. And we will. Yeah. So it's still a function of sticking to your process. By the way, Matt, I'll end with this. Process before progress is your trademarked. When you have a process that you have ultimate confidence in that process, guess what? I don't stress. I didn't stress when COVID was crashing the markets at 35%. I stressed a little during the financial crisis of 07, but guess what? That was 16 years ago. I'd only been managing money at that time for 10 years. Mm-hmm. Now I'm 26 years in. I've seen these horses run before. Now it's just another day at the office, quite frankly. And this volatility is what creates the opportunities long-term. And that's what we're going to stick to. We're going to stick to the process.
Remember, everybody, when everybody is screaming that the sky is falling, there's somebody who realizes that this is a great opportunity. Media is all about getting clicks and making sure that they keep the eyeballs on the stuff. So they're going to make things sound the way that they need to make it sound, good, bad, or indifferent, to keep people's eyeballs on the screens. If you have actual clarity and know what you own and why you own it, then you're not going to be as affected by the headlines and those sorts of things, because it's very simple. Those things don't necessarily apply to you as much as they want you to apply, or the media wants you to think that they apply.
Sure.
Now, finally, if you're working with somebody who is underperforming the same rate that the stock markets are underperforming, then you probably need to find out a little bit more about what you own and why you own it. And most importantly, stay tuned to this podcast to keep focused on really what investing with clarity truly means. Thanks for your brain today, brother.
Thanks, brother. We'll talk soon.
All right. If you have not subscribed to the podcast, make sure you do. If you know somebody who really should have clarity in their life, it's very easy to share this podcast. And also make sure that you're going to the Invest with Clarity website and find out a little bit more about who the Nepsis team is and what they can do for you. So for everybody at Nepsis, this is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.